When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even if you've only got a platform ticket, use the opportunity to jump on board now, because the train in platform number 7 is about to depart. What is that train?
That train is the Mallard, and it's leaving, going up the country, around the country, and throughout the whole trip, you'll be listening to Jules and Jim's Joyride. Ceaseless toil is his meter, his voice so grandiose, it brings orphans and widows to tears. Ark at him. It's Mark Arman.
Mark Arman, yes.
Hey. Hi, Jim. Hi, Jules. Yes.
So
good
nice
to see you.
Here. What a wonderful introduction.
Yeah, it's great to see anybody, really, isn't it? Now, I always think it's good to see anybody.
Yeah,
really,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what we think. That's why you're here.
Yes.
And it's great to have you here. And you are, of course, you know, a very well travelled man, because you've spent your life, I mean, quite a bit of it on tour with me, actually. But you've spent your life going around the world. Is travel something you enjoy?
I absolutely love travel. I think that's been one of the main things that I've missed so much, is that I'm just travelling abroad, going to different places. I have a bucket list. You know, you have a bucket list when you're getting on a little bit. You must know that when you're getting on a bit, and you kind of have a bucket list of places you'd like to go to and experiences that you'd like to have. Because I always think it's important when you get older to have experiences, not things. So I like to, well, I want to go here and experience this. I want to try this meal. I want to try that. I want to do this. I want to see this. I want to see that.
Would you travel a long way to get a meal, which might be just good fish and chips?
Fish and chips, actually, I had some fantastic fish and chips last week, because I went out to see my mum up in Southport. And on the way back, we went off the motorway to Coventry, and we were trying to find some.
Place to look for fish and chips. Well, it's landlocked. Coventry is landlocked.
We were starving, and we were thinking all the service stations were like wastelands, really. There was nothing there. I said, I remember this little, our last hope is a fish and chip shop that's just off the motorway in Coventry. And there it was. It was open, and we sat there on the edge of the murk, eating fresh. There was nobody else there. He made us fresh fish and chips on a tray, and we sat there on the edge of the murk eating fish and chips. And I thought, this is what life is all about.
Haddock or cod?
It was cod, actually, but it was very,
what
very.
What do you favour?
I'm a haddock man, actually, myself.
Yeah.
Well, it's haddock Lancashire and cod Yorkshire. I can't remember. One is like, I think haddock is Lancashire and cod is Yorkshire.
What's the best fish and chip place you've ever been to?
Oh, well, there's no question about it. It is the award-winning, and quite rightly so, Chez Fred in Bournemouth.
Absolutely,
and
I
would
know
you concur
it well.
With that? And it's not like fish and chips you get anywhere else. It's so delicious. And I only discovered it because we were on tour 25 years ago, and I had the newspaper open in the car, and it said Bournemouth Fish and Chip Shop wins award for fish and chips once again. Chez Fred. So we went to Bournemouth, and there it was, and it's unbelievable.
And it's really
it's amazing. It's the best fish and chip shop I've been to. I'm certainly introduced to it by Jules. And when you go there, Fred will roll out the red carpet and it's the red newspaper, whatever.
And all of the celebrities of Bournemouth have been there, of course. And the political parties have it, they come in for it. It doesn't deliver so well. It doesn't travel, the fish and chips thing.
Have you been to the Cottage in Blackpool?
Is that a fish and chip shop or a sex place?
It's a fish and chip shop. And you go in there, and it's the walls are full of celebrities who've had their fish and chips in there. Absolutely. But they're all kind of end of the pier.
Like, I love that. That's fantastic.
And that's what's great about it. But it's not just them. Then you've got a load of prog rockers in there, like Greenslade and Jethro Tull and all that.
That sounds my kind of place.
No,
what's it called again, Jim?
It's called The Cottage.
Going back to the places you travel to have dinner. So, for instance, I would go to Zurich just to eat at the Kronenhalle.
Yes.
Which is the sort of the grandest restaurant in Zurich.
Is it? Because I went to Zurich. I couldn't find anywhere decent.
Oh, my, the Kronenhalle is like you get ancient sort of foreign legion colonels, money launderers, artists. I mean, it's so delicious. And they aged waiters come around in their white uniforms carving from a trolley for you. Or, of course, Plakutta in Vienna. Putin's favourite restaurant. You know, these are places that have been there for years. They don't do anything fancy. They do the same thing and they've done it for years. I think those are the places I'd travel to.
Here's my Zurich experience. It was our wedding anniversary and we went to what we thought was the poshest place, not the place you said, and I got, it was like a bright orange sausage and some potatoes and I think it was about 300 quid. But then we thought we'd go to the top of this mountain. Yeah. So we got a train to the top of this mountain covered in snow. It was really beautiful, a fantastic hotel at the top, and we ordered a dish which is called Food of the World, and it turned up and it was like some various takeaways. So there'd be a Chinese takeaway all on the same plate, Chinese, Indian, and
a little bit of this, a little bit of that,
but all together on the same plate, and it was vile.
Did you, when you, because it's important, it's all about the question, did you say I want the best restaurant, or did you say I want the most expensive restaurant that you can find?
That's the error.
Yes, And the other thing I've learned is people that know the best restaurants are old because they spent their last gains in them. You know,
old people know the best places.
Yeah, my brother follows old people around the supermarket just to see what they buy.
There's a lot of sense in that because if you follow old people, you're not going to get food poisoning.
No, that's right. Exactly. They know about that sort of thing.
Safe on the stomach.
What you say is to the people, if you're asking in the hotel, for instance, is where would you take your mother for her 75th birthday?
Yeah.
You can end up in some delicious places. It depends what their mum's like, of course.
Well,
you know.
My mum's 93, and I've just been out with her and took her place. She always forgets what she's ever had. So we went out and had some Japanese, and she said, "Oh, I like this foreign food." And that's something you only from the mouths of old people. Yeah. Foreign food.
In these modern days.
Foreign, that foreign stuff.
And Mark, what's your favourite form of... for instance, I remember we'd just done a show together somewhere and we were being driven back to London the next morning, but you got dropped off at Heathrow because you were straight off to Russia to do a show.
Absolutely.
For instance, you're very popular in Russia. And didn't you have a fantastic experience travelling in Russia before years ago with the...
Well, I did.
On the planes.
I mean, when I first went to Russia was, I think it was about 1992, and I was taken there as a cheap date by the British Council to Russia, Siberia, the Baltic States. And this was still very communist. Even though it had changed and the wall had come down and Gorbachev and everything else, Perestroika, but it was still very, very communist. And we arrived in Moscow to fly to Omsk in Siberia. Mm. We had to wait for hours and hours because the plane had to come from Omsk to Moscow, 6 hours or something like that, to pick us up to take us back again. And it got halfway to Moscow and then realised it ran out of petrol, so it went back again to Omsk to come back to pick us up again. And when we finally did arrive, we all had to just, right, say, run for it, get on the plane, run for it, because everyone had to run for the plane. And so there was a gunfight going on to get on the plane. People were bringing guns out and going, "No, I've been waiting here for 6 hours, So we just had to run to the plane, hoisting our cases up a ladder onto the plane, where we sat there with no seatbelts, no anything like that.
People smoking.
People were standing in the aisles.
You
just sitting there.
They had farm animals on them.
They had. Well, there was an overwhelming smell of chicken, of broiling chicken. And the hostess, who had bright blue eye makeup or green eye makeup and sort of like stockings and suspenders and this split sort of skirt. Really, it was really like that. And she'd bring a bucket of boiling chicken round. So she brought this boiling chicken round, this pervading smell of chicken. Then she brought round a single Mars bar on a tray. Everyone was too guilty to eat the Mars bar. You know, I can't have that Mars bar. It was an adventure. It was a total nightmare. But looking back at it with the rose-tinted spectacles, it was amazing adventure. And I stayed in the same bed that Boris Yeltsin had stayed in the week before. They hadn't washed the sheets, God.
No.
Obviously.
What an honour.
And it was just a horrendously horrible experience, but it was kind of fantastic as well. I should say that Russia is very different. It has changed a lot since then. But this was the days...
This is old Russia,
changing from perestroika, from the Soviet days, to a kind of a stumbling its way into a modern Russia. But I look back at it, and I'm glad I had that experience, because if I could put up with that, I could put up with anything.
You might not remember this, but we met in my house in New Cross about 1982 or three. I used to live in a house with test department.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I'd get up in the morning and there'd be some new character there. One day it was you, the next day it'd be Susie Sue. And one day I came down and Blixa Belgaard from Anstruppsende Neubauten was stood cooking bacon in nothing but a pair of wellies.
Oh!
Well, that's lovely. I think that's a very, very dangerous thought, actually. Yeah. Cooking bacon in a pair of wellies. That must have been an amazingly crazy house to live in, because test department, they were all quite crazy. They were a group that played with metal, weren't they? All their instruments were metal, and they made kind of rhythms out of, and so did Neubauten, didn't they? It was all kind of rhythmic of metal sort of.
Well, that metal
things.
First of all came from a factory in Millwall, which had been knocked down, and it was a great big metal sort of tank which had test department number 6 painted on the side of it. So
they were
came
great
back
guys, in. Test department. They were all it was all wonderful groups of people in those days. It was those wonderful days.
And Mark, going back to the thing of you tour, you've never driven, is that right?
I've never driven. I can't drive. I have owned cars, and I love cars.
You've given cars to people.
I bought a car once. It was back in the 84. You might have to help me with, remember what kind of, it was a Mercedes.
Saloon, was it a 500S?
Probably, yeah.
SE or whatever.
And we called it Oscar.
Yeah.
And we drove all over. I just get friends to drive. I went straight into a showroom and I said, I was doing quite well in those days. And I said, I'll have that one, please. He said, would you like a phone in it, sir? And I said, well, I wouldn't mind, actually. I'll have a phone in it. He said, would you like a fridge in the back? So I said, oh, I'll have one of those as well, actually. We bought this Mercedes and had it for a long time, and it kind of, we had marvellous, wonderful travelling over Europe with it, but I could never drive it.
No, that's a good car for touring, you know.
It was absolutely huge.
German cars, yeah. Mercedes,
what did you keep your boiled eggs and so forth in the fridge?
I don't know whether they actually used the fridge, actually. They had a phone that was the size of a giant. Yeah,
no, but I loved those because I felt like when they first got
I don't think
those,
we could phone anybody because nobody else had one, so.
Well, you could have rung me. I think I had one, but it was I much preferred them when they were in the car and then they had the coily lead that attached them to the car, the same as the coily lead that you had on an old telephone at home. You know, that was when the phone went in the car, it was such a, you felt like you were the most glamorous person in the world. Yeah. Excuse me, I just got to take this call. Yeah. You know, I have just absolutely, I loved that. Oh, that was great.
What was that in?
I think I had a Jaguar XJ12.
That had a great big one on the centre console,
that's
didn't
right,
it?
Exactly.
The phone, so you picked up, hello, Roger Moore.
Not only did you have the phone with all of its numbers and letters, like an old sort of phone, but you had all of these switches and gauges going across and buttons. And I mean, there was so much control going on there, really. I mean, that was the way to live. I looked down, I think I should have had a jacket that was like an airline pilot's jacket with like some gold bands around the cuff.
I mean, I think as the royalties kind of went down a bit, I think the car got swapped for smaller cars and swap you that for that and have a bit of extra cash in the bank, swap with that bit of cash in the bank. I think we ended up with like probably swapped it for like 20 Exodus and a Mini, I think. Probably at the end of the day.
Well, it's something. And you were saying that you like travelling for experiences. You know, the experience was more than buying something. You just wanted to go for a different experience. Any that you've got planned once all the pandemic and you can travel again?
I'd like to go to the an Arctic place or the Arctic. I mean, Russia, of course, you can get that. So I'd love to go to the Antarctic, or well, there's still some left, really. Or I'd love to always want to do one of those big adventures where I never get sent. I've always wanted to be open to doing those big adventures where they send you places, you know, and you have to do sort of live in an igloo or something like that, or live in a.
I can't see you really liking that.
Well,
I mean, as a dear old friend of mine, and having been on tour with you, I don't know that it really.
Well,
I
do like 5-star travel jewels. It's very true. I do like when I can get it. I'll have it. But I mean, I do kind of fancy the idea. I just don't know. I just kind of like this idea of having some adventures, I think.
Yeah.
Some last minute adventures. It's that bucket list thing again, you know, where you think, I can do that.
I'll go with
and I think it would be hilarious anyway. It would be amusing.
I've always wanted to go to the Arctic.
It would be amusing.
You've been,
Live in, yeah, well, we'll go, Jim. We'll do a little trick, yeah, and we'll live in
a short one,
and we'll have some, you know, some people can show us how to cook
kill a seal,
a piece of blubber or something, yes, over a fire or something.
You've got the right, yes, yeah, a blubber sushi. I think you've got the right idea.
I was thinking of that.
That's of course the Antarctic, which is where I went, which is the north, which is the south.
Well, I'd like to go there too.
That was pretty incredible, and it was so remote. You could see like these mountains or ice. Sort of great, sort of, yeah, ice. It was like being in a surrealist landscape. It would be like being in a Salvador Dali painting.
Oh, I'm sure.
These strange, gigantic sculptures, hundreds of feet high, made of ice. But then what you realise is, over the top of the sort of horizons, there was just more nothing. It was just so remote, and there was just, you realize, if you fell overboard, that was, yeah, the end of it. You know, what would you do? You were remote, in the middle of nowhere. But the one of the strange places we did visit, and I think you might have liked this, was a disused British research station, which they'd all had to abandon because they only had a window of like a week, yeah, when the weather was going to be okay, and they left it in 1958. And because the temperatures were all frozen, the entire contents of this research station of 1958 are completely untouched. There's no rats, there's no mice, yeah, there's no flies, there's no insects. Everything's frozen. So literally you go in, there's the bunks, there's their duffel coats, right, hanging there. There's, yeah, a pin-up of Joan Collins on the wall. There's a couple of newspapers that were probably a bit out of date anyway. A radio. There was spam, which was probably all perfectly still edible. And a great big stock of Smedley's peas. Right. And that to me was like extraordinary. You would see all the wildlife.
Well, that's the
and
place
then the Smedley's
that I would like to go to, because I think I might be getting my Arctics mixed up with my Antarctic. Where are the penguins?
They're in the Arctic, which
where,
is the top.
Where are the polar bears?
No, the Antarctic. I want to go with the penguins. Yeah, the penguins are fantastic.
And so I'd like to go there, and I'd like to have a real kind of experience of an adventure going there. I can do hardship. I know you haven't had.
You've come here.
I can do hardship.
What about Shackleton?
Yes,
that story is incredible. I was reading the story of Shackleton, whose ship collapsed, and, yeah, they got on this tiny, tiny boat and went across these horrendous seas, and that. I mean, the story's unbelievable.
Fantastic.
And I have to say, having been to that part of the world, you realise that you're out, it's so cold and so remote and so desolate. To be trudging through that is such, you'd have to really terrifying, really.
You have to be very hard.
Amazing, yeah.
Oh,
amazing.
I could do that. I'm actually quite...
Well, what about the jungle? How would you fare in the jungle?
The jungle, less so. I like the idea of the snow appeals to me much more, and the cold appeals to me much more than the heat. I would experience the jungle, but maybe more snow is more my thing, I think.
Snow's the thing. Yeah. I mean, both. But the jungle, yeah, that's quite incredible. The rain. I was in Corcovado National Park in Costa Rica, and the only way you can get there is by boat. There's no roads there, and that when it starts raining there, you know about it. It's like someone's just pouring a bucket of water on you.
Those are the sort of things that I'd like, those real experiences that I'd like to have. Not the glamorous cruise, you know, where you just step off the cruise ship and have a little wander around the sort of the beads and things. But you know, just you actually experience the real thing. And a jungle or cold, but snow is my probably preferred thing. But I'd do a jungle.
Musicians have travel thrust upon, yeah, them, and some of them embrace it and others don't. But you like me on tour, you're around the museums, you're around the restaurants, you know, you go 100 miles out of your way to have lunch somewhere particularly.
I do. I like to visit somewhere and I like to experience a place.
Yeah. And we were only chatting earlier about how when we played in the Istanbul Jazz Festival, I was presented with a lovely leather jacket, yes, and you were wondering why you didn't get one. And now we're thinking that perhaps that leather jacket was just somebody else's that they'd left in my dressing room and I thought it was a gift.
I think it probably was.
But it's delightful to have
stole
it.
Somebody's jacket.
And we were talking, for some reason, we got onto the subject of erotic art.
Yes.
Do you collect that at all?
I don't really get... I mean, I have a few nice little bits and pieces, but I mean, it's mostly stuff to match the sofa, really.
Yep. Have you got an erotic sofa?
I don't have an erotic sofa.
Do you have any erotic art? Is that something you... It sounds like I'm obsessed with it, but you bought it up.
We were doing a film once, and with Christian Slater, the American actor, and he was telling me that he collected erotic art, and I said, I've got some, and I'll bring it in next week. And I was building myself up, building it up. I ain't got any at all. But what I did do was...
It's a complete lie.
Yeah, completely.
Oh, I've got that.
But he said he collected it. He said, I'd really like to see it. And I played it straight for a week and then took him in some awful schoolboy sketches that I'd done of ladies and gentlemen in erotic positions that were the most awful, like, schoolboy drawings. And I made a big deal and presented to him. I said, hey, open the scroll. And he carefully opened it and then looked.
And what did he do? What
look on his face. I think because I'd built it up so much, he really was expecting
something. Were
there
life drawings?
Did them in about 30 seconds. You can imagine how rough.
Not from a model, though. From
they were just very crude drawings. Yeah.
But that'd be worth something, though. They could be worth something. To sign them, they'd be worth something.
I think
they'd
be worth
something.
Probably burned. You know, instantly.
Make all that more collectible.
It's all how you frame them, really. If you're beautifully framed and beautifully presented.
He was expecting something. Well, he stood, you know, he struck a quite a dynamic position.
I mean,
as he opened the parcel, you know, look with his leg up, stubbed his fag out on some imperial leather and opened him up and had a look.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I have a jackdaw called Dawkins, who rather an old jackdaw now.
He must be old now. Yeah,
jackdaws, they say, left it in the wild to about 5 years, but I think Dawkins has got another 10, really.
Where did Dawkins come from?
Dawkins came from a friend of mine up in Yorkshire, has a falconry and a bird sanctuary, and this was a nest that had been decimated by other birds, and it was the remaining egg was left in the nest, so we took it and incubated it and said, would you like a jackdaw? So I can't say whether I would do the same thing again, but it's been a fascinating, it's just a lovely lovely pet, but I would not one I would recommend to a lot of people to have, because if you do have a corvid, like a crow or jackdaw, they are very, very fascinating, rewarding, entertaining, brilliant birds. He can turn on the television herself. We found out, we thought it was a he until she laid an egg, and then now it's a she, but still called Dawkins, after Jack Dawkins, the artful dodger in Oliver Twist, of course. And so she can turn on the television, she can turn on the air cooler herself, so she can sit on the air cooler with the cool air going up her feathers. She can turn on the TV, she has piles of child's toy bricks that she plays with all day long, and squeaky balls.
Do you have a macaw as well, macaw?
I have two parrots. I have a parrot called Fruity and a parrot called Casper.
They're
not really friends. They'll tolerate each other to an extent, then you'll hardly hear a screeching coming from the other room and have to run and kind of pull them all apart. But
and do they say much?
They don't. They're not really talking parrots. I had a talking parrot for about 30 odd years called Jacko, and he could sing Tainted Love, he could sing everything, he could do everything. He could sing it, yeah. I thought of sending him out on tour, actually, and just staying at home would be good.
We've got a carrion crow that we feed in
Have
our
you?
Garden, yeah. Notice the same one, because it's got a white patch on the back of its head, not like a hooded crow, but it's got a white patch on the back. So we feed that and our foxes, which we feed every day.
Oh my God, we've got a lot of foxes.
Have you?
Oh, I think around our area there is a huge set of foxes. There was like nine running down the. If you hear them at night, have you heard them at night? They scream like babies, at night. They scream and they make noise and they howl, and you can watch them running down. There's about nine of them all running down the street, you know, pulling all the bins out and leaping on top of the cars and everything, and the sort of some. Bermondsey lady will be running out of the house, shaking her fist, going, get away, and shoo, shoo, and shooing them away, and shut up at 3 o'clock in the morning or something. And
I remember hearing in Greenwich once, hearing a fox screaming.
Yeah, they scream.
And I really thought it was a woman being attacked and went out looking.
They really are.
Find the, because it really did sound like someone, yeah. She's been attacked. I'm going to put a stop to this.
It's a frightening noise. It's a very, when you get four or five of them fighting in the street at 3 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, it's
They're quite different horrific. City foxes to country foxes. There is a difference.
There's urban difference. Foxes, yeah.
Urban foxes. Yeah, I think one of them's got a longer snout.
I mean, for like an urban area, there's so much wildlife. We've got foxes, we've got different types of corvids, we've got parrots living in the...
I did when I went to the Antarctic, you had to go to this small place in Colombia called Punta Arenas. Tiny little town, and it took forever to get there. You had to sort of change flights, and it was all quite difficult. Yeah, yeah. And it was right down on the southern part of Colombia, and then you could get out. Anyway, we got there a day early before the people were taking us and everybody else arrived. So we went out. There was just me and my wife. We thought, we'll just go and have a look at what's sort of local thing. There was a national park.
Right.
And bear in mind, it's the tip of South America, so you'd think there'll be some pretty extraordinary things there. So a taxi driver takes us up, and the national park's on top of the mountain. There's trails you can walk around for an hour, so we thought we'll do that. And as we just going up the mountain, and then we come around the corner into where you sort of the national park begins, and there's a car park, and the taxi driver says, "Wait, Josh, listen, look, in the bushes there." So he stops, turns the engine off, and we're like, "What is it? You know, something really like some extraordinary creature, and maybe one of those giant birds that are sort of 10 feet tall or whatever." Yeah. You know, and out of the bushes came a rabbit. Look, it's a rabbit. I thought, well, we've got those in Kent, mate. I said, trying to get rid of them.
Yes. That was it.
A rabbit. Yeah.
And that was the biggest thrill.
And
this was a wildlife park.
Exactly. There is a giant bird. What's that giant bird called?
Which one? Emu, cassowary.
Cassowary.
That's the one. Cassowary.
Isn't that the biggest one that killed somebody?
They're really violent, those things, yeah.
And they're about 9 foot tall.
I think when I tour with you, Jules, we found a great little bird place. We were watching this cassowary. It was a fantastic...
How would you describe it to see it?
It wasn't quite like an emu-y
sort of... Well, prehistoric. They've got
kind of like this... And as we were watching it... I've got to say, it did probably the biggest dump I've ever seen in my entire life. And that's all I remember about the cassowary. I still talk about that with Trevor now. The cassowary. Trevor the cassowary that did a gigantic dump.
I was hearing the other day, one of the earliest musical instruments that is now discovered in relatively modern times, which is 1300 BC, which is modern times because that's when they were building the pyramid, so that is relatively modern times. It's evidentially... That means proven that there were giant herons that were about 7 foot tall and had a 10 foot wingspan, and their thigh bones were used as early flutes. And they've found these flutes. I wonder what they've figured now. The archaeologists and some people have worked out that's what it is. And so that's the earliest sort of woodwind instrument. Well, wind instrument that people are aware of.
The heron leg flute.
The heron leg flute. That's very collectible. And who can dream of what they sounded like when played by the ancient Egyptians?
Maybe like a heron?
Could be. I had to shout at a heron this morning.
You what, shouted at one?
I shouted at
herons. Herons are lovely.
They're beautiful looking, but they want to kill all the frogs, you see.
So you shout, okay,
but that's the nature of frogs.
I know. I wouldn't hurt a heron, but
the foxes eat the guinea fowl and the...
Yeah, so I don't hurt them, but I do shout at them to go away. At first, I tried impersonating the heron to see if I could speak its language, so I would make a sort of a... I'll just stand up with the microphone. Ah!
And that's a heron.
Yes.
Really?
I think if you come close.
If I saw a heron present that kind of call, I'd run a mile.
That's actually terrifying.
That didn't see him off.
That was more like a silverback gorilla.
Yeah, thank you.
It sounds like carnage, actually, at your place, actually, doesn't it?
It's like, I'll tell you what, it's like the sort of wild jungle out there.
It is, it's carnage, absolute carnage.
Yeah.
I love your little guinea fowls.
So do I. That's why I don't want the fox eating them.
They're adorable, aren't they?
When I was a kid, we used to play football with guinea fowls' eggs because they're so tough. And there used to be a lot of them. Where I grew up, in the countryside, there was a farm there, and it had a chicken coop right in the middle of the farm. And one of the games we used to play was like commandos. You had to get round and nick an egg from the chicken coop, which was right across the farmer's front yard.
Were you dressed as a World War II commando sort of thing? With
I
bear
think probably in those days it was quite popular to wear bomber jackets from the army. So we'd creep around on our stomachs and get the egg. You had to get the egg and then get out of there because the farmer and his sons were known to be quite violent characters. And one of them, one of my friends, got caught, was put in the back of the truck, and we saw him, his face at the back windows, saying, mouthing, help me, help me.
Where did he get to, where did they take him?
They took him into the barn.
Never seen again? Never seen again?
No, this is, they took him into the barn, strapped him up, and said, we'll let you go if you tell us where you've hidden your nudie mags.
Well, that's an image, isn't it, really?
And did he?
He didn't have any hidden, but they thought he did, so they bushwhacked him a bit, bullwhipped him, whatever, you know, and then set him free.
Well,
and
that
he
was
came. What age was he? So 25 or?
This was last week. No, he was, I would say, about 12. That was a good story for him that he dined on for a long time.
Yeah. Oh, God.
That boy was me.
No, was he you? Wasn't,
And here's a message from our sponsors. I tried explaining to my 4-year-old son that it's perfectly normal to poop your pants, but he still keeps making fun of me.
You need Dumpster's catch-all pants. When nature calls, you're in control. You're in control. You're in control.
You're in control.
Do you like driving at speed? Because I've been with you in the autobahns in Germany. You
yes.
can travel along at 100 miles an hour.
I love
it's
that,
now,
actually.
You're
yeah.
allowed to do that and everything.
Oh, yes, I absolutely love that. I mean, I love cars. I love old American cars, really. I've got an obsession about old American cars. Whenever I go to America or I go to Los Angeles or whatever, the thing to do is just always hire an old, like a Chevrolet Stingray or a Studebaker or an old Cadillac or something and just drive around in it because that's, you know, play rock and roll music because that's what you have to do.
Yeah, that's the culture invented that. Yeah.
When you're there, that's what they're inventing.
Do you think
for.
Americans do the same here, though? You know, because there's that romance, isn't it? And we imagine that. I had a cultural exchange with a rodeo rider once.
Yeah.
Who stayed at my house, then stole my Vauxhall Viva and drove it off to Dundee, where he got a job as an upholsterer. That's not true, but imagine if that were...
That would be... You're saying for the rodeo rider, that would be the British dream.
Yeah.
Vauxhall
Viva, yeah.
Listening to the home service.
Listening to Shwaddy Waddy.
Shwaddy Waddy.
No, I think you're right. That would all make sense. I think that's right. No, but I mean, for instance, I do like... It's nice to fit the car to the thing.
Yeah.
You know, for instance... you know, you might want to kind of be, if you're in Italy, it'd be great to have a sort of Ferrari and you'd be listening to like maybe Italian opera music. You know, I did go around Germany in a fast Mercedes doing 120 miles an hour on the autobahn, listening to Bach. You know, wherever you are, you want to, if you're driving through Wales, I'd be listening to Tom Jones. I'd love it, you know.
But were you tempted to put on Autobahn by Kraftwerk?
Well, that would have been a good one to put on, exactly, yeah. Here's a serious tip for everyone. There's a very good app for your phone, as well as your podcast app on which you can receive this podcast and other three gifts. You can go to one called Radio Garden. And basically, it's a map of the world and there's thousands of dots. As you zoom in on here, it might be Cuba, it might be South London, it might be Paris, anywhere in the world, Jamaica, Memphis, whatever. As you zoom in, all the radio stations come up and you just touch one and that radio station plays to your phone.
That's magic.
Really?
And it really is great. It's like, whoa.
That's like magic, isn't it?
Yeah, you can hear ones.
That is magic.
You know, there's one I heard in Russia the other day, fantastic, they're playing this classical music. I don't even know what it was because they said it at the end, but it made me cry. It was so beautiful, some pianist playing.
So you could be driving through Hull and listening to Radio Exeter.
Exactly. Yes. Can you imagine living the dream? Yeah. Exactly like that. When you're saying, well, you're driving through Memphis and you want to, or when I was driving from Mississippi, wanting to listen to these sort of radio stations to give me the vibe.
Yeah.
I could actually, if I wanted to, just go and sit in my car. Well, you can't travel at the moment. I could go and sit in my car. And I could be tuning into sort of the Austrian home service.
Yeah.
And imagine I was driving through the sort of Austrian mountains. Yeah. You know, so you or wherever in Italy or whatever, you know. So, Yeah.
I never cease to be amazed by this. That's absolutely magic, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a tip you've heard here on this podcast. I think it's a great thing. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, it's fun.
Now everyone's looking for that app.
I'll be getting the app on my phone, actually. Yeah.
And what do I get out of it? Yeah. Fuck all. Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, it's been a thorough enjoyment and very informative today.
That's right.
It's been a trip around the world today,
all over the world, and it's been a pleasure having him as our guest here today, the great singer, songwriter, and man, Mark Almond.
Thank you.
Well, there goes lovely Mark, walking home, probably via the fish and chip shop.
Probably via the fish and chip shop to pack his bags to go off and do another show in Russia where they love him.
And maybe to Antarctica where I shall join him. This podcast was produced and edited by Molly Stewart.
Sound engineers were James Stewart and George Latham.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.